KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. We're here on your radio at KWAI 1080 every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. Here we'll talk about environmental issues, fishermen's concerns, government matters, and whatever interests you regarding environmental and government waste and abuse. If you would like to share your thoughts and concerns in the future, or give us a call at 782-6627. Or here at the station, 524-1080. Thank you. Today, what we're going to do is have a couple of gentlemen that is involved in the fishing industry, have knowledge of the fishing industry. One has fished some while, another is active fishing. Mr. Bill Mossman, and Mr. Mossman on occasion writes for the Hawaii Fishing News, and a number of his articles can be covered in there, as well as you can find some of our articles in the Hawaii Fishing News. And if you want to follow up on some of these issues, you can pick up at Long's, some of the grocery stores, McCully Shop, and other places, or contact the Hawaii Fishing News through their website. Anyway, I'm going to introduce Mr. Bill Mossman, and also my other guest here is Mr. Gary Deal. Welcome, Bill.
Yeah, good morning, Carol. Thanks for having us on the show. It's an opportunity for us to say a little bit about our positions on various fishing matters. Appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. Bill, there's a couple things that we've been talking about. The Magnuson-Stevenson Reauthorization Act. Can you tell us a bit about that, and what are your concerns, and what do you see the positives about it, and what things that you see could be a problem to the fishermen?
I think the immediate effect of the Magnuson-Stevens Act in Hawaii is going to be effective on the 1st of January next year, 8 months from now. All the recreational fishermen are going to have to register with the federal agency, the National Marine Fisheries Service, to be able to fish in Hawaii, in the salt water, of course. This may come as a shock to a lot of people who haven't kept up with the news articles on the Magnuson Act. But there it is. You know, come 1 January, New Year's Day next year, that requirement to register is going to be effective. What that will require is that those who fish from the shore, as well as those who fish from boats, will have to register. And it'll be free for the first year or two, but then there will be registration fees associated with registering for fishing in Hawaii.
I see. What's the driving force behind this, and where did this all come about? Who generated this or felt there was a need to reauthorize?
Perhaps most of the fishermen know that throughout the nation, and especially in Hawaii, there is a well-established commercial marine licensing program for the commercial fishermen, which requires that they report their catches, the number, weight, etc., of the fish they catch, and the data is collected and maintained and studied by the scientists. And over the years, culminating this past year, the National Marine Fisheries Service has determined that there are certain species that we catch out here, yellowfin being one of them, has started to become overfished. And that means the stock is starting to decline, and the computed rate of fishing is such that the decline will continue. What the Magnuson Act is trying to do is to stop the overfishing of these designated overfished fishes. The method that they've chosen to use is referred to as the annual catch limit, or ACL, in which they very simply stated, in which they scientifically calculate the number of fish that can be caught during a fishing season, and when that point is reached, all fishing for that particular species is stopped.
So what you're saying basically is that this is a tool to prevent overfishing, and my question would be, what are they relying on? Do we have the statistics that we can really rely on? As you may recall, you and I discussed this about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I shared a phone conversation with you that we had, where the records, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, their records are in delinquent to some 3 years in accuracy. So what are we really basing the this act on, or this reauthorization? Can we say that the catch rates are accurately reflected and reported?
Well, the problem that has crept up on us, and which the Magnuson-Stevens Act is trying to address, is that certain fishes are being overfished, as I mentioned earlier, and this is an attempt to stop that. And I explained to you the ACL method of doing it. But also recall, as mentioned earlier, that it doesn't take much of an imagination to figure out that you need to be keeping track of all the fish you catch on almost a real-time basis to be able to work an annual catch limit fishery management system. And as I pointed out earlier, this system of fishermen reporting their catches and dealers reporting their sales, etc., have existed for many, many years in the commercial side of the fishery sector, but it has never, I repeat, never been used for recreational fishermen in Hawaii. And to a large degree, that absence of recreational fisheries data exists throughout most of the nation. And that's why the Magnuson-Stevens Act addressed that subject now, because if they are going to be successful with an annual catch limit management system, they have to know how many fish are being caught regardless of who's catching them. So we need a sum total of the commercial catch and the recreational catch to know exactly how that species is being declined.
I see. One of the things that I learned in doing some background and research on this, I learned that a fisherman could actually submit a record today, and these records should be accurate and timely. But what was really puzzling is that they being the DLNR, permits, or the Department of Aquatic Resources, will allow the fishermen to submit the records today and come back and correct them some 3 years later. That simply isn't accuracy. You know, in other words, you get to call in or you get to contact the DLNR and say that I made a mistake. I actually caught 500 ton or whatever, but I want to readjust that or resubmit and make it more accurate. That seems to put to question the accuracy of this. And one of the other things is what I'm interested in is if this is in place and it's implemented, how it's supposed to work and who's to enforce it.
Okay. How is it going to work? Okay, as I mentioned earlier, in the commercial sector, all the commercial fishermen report what they catch. There's a specific form that is filled out and is the basis for all the data that they gather. And also, none of this reporting exists in the recreational sector. Have I answered your question there?
Yeah. So the annual catch limits are set up for any particular species or all species. Can you share with us what species this ACL will be covering?
Right now, the species being targeted for the annual catch limit system of management in Hawaii are going to be the big-eye tuna, yellowfin tuna, and the favorite deep 7 or 8, whatever the figure might be today, of bottom fish. That's all. Yeah. But that may grow as different species may enter the overfished area. None appear to be on the horizon.
Well, what I'd like to ask Gary to chime in here, could you just, what I've experienced in the last couple of months, I'm aware of the deep 7 because it's my interest, but I actually have met fishermen that are puzzled, and I don't know if it's out of just laziness on their part or whatever, but could you take the opportunity and let us know what the deep 7 species are, Gary?
Sure, Carol. First of all, good morning.
Yeah, thank you.
And good morning, Bill. Although I had it in mind on this beautiful day in Hawaii, nay, to jump on my boat and go drag some colorful plastic around today, I do appreciate the opportunity to come down and speak with you guys on the show here. The deep 7 is a very recently coined term. Bottom fish, per se, exist everywhere from the coral reefs and the inshore stuff all the way to 200, 300 fathoms of water way outside. They're all bottom fish in the sense that they all are attracted and make the bottom their habitat. The deep 7 is, I say, a recently coined descriptive of 7 species, all of which are, quote, deep, which basically means more than about 40 fathoms, deeper than that, roughly. They're very familiar names, most of them. We got Opakapaka, Onaga, and Ehu. You got Kalikali, Lehi, and the one non-snapper, it's a grouper, our sea bass, our Hapupupu. These are the so-called deep 7. And these, for a number of years, Onaga and Ehu have been known to be stressed in the main Hawaiian Islands. Opakapaka was doing all right, and they began to think that the numbers on the Hapupu began to fall. And then when the ACL came out, and the whole Reauthorization Act transpired with ACLs or tax, annual catch limit or total allowable catch or quota, is what it used to be called, they kind of lumped them all together because in bottom fishing, if you've ever done it, you'll know that it's kind of hard to stay away from one and not get the other. You can catch Kalikali deep in 150 fathoms of Onaga, and you can also catch them all the way up along with Opakapaka in about 40 fathoms. So how, you know, really truly, how are you going to target just 2 or 3 of those stressed species as opposed to the whole bunch? And I guess the managers decided that we can't. So let's just address all 7 of them. And there are a few other much rarer species that lurk in these waters, but they're not major, and they, I guess, weren't basically enough data to determine the status of their stocks because they are kind of rare, things like the golden kalikali and so forth. So that's the deep 7, Carol, and they, and as Bill said, the 2 kinds of tuna are what Hawaii is being concerned with right now.
I see. Backing up a bit, Bill, with this Magnuson-Stevenson Reauthorization Act, is it a done deal? Is it inscribed in stone or etched in stone now? Or is there any way that the fishermen can oppose it? Can they file for an exemption? Is there any challenges that you're aware of, legal challenges, or has there been any move afoot to ask for an exemption if one is allowed?
The Act itself has written right into it a complete section on exemptions, and there's a lot of information associated with the Act that tells you what you need to do to get an exemption. Really, that is one of the biggest concerns I have in getting that information out to the public, that it's not a done deal to the extent that you must follow what the Act says, because it does. The Act itself does provide for exemption. But it is been signed off by the President, and it is a law, and that part that affects us starts on New Year's, this coming New Year's Day. So, yeah, it's imminent. We can talk more about the details later.
But the exemption, there can be a challenge to this. People can, the fishermen or whomever interested party can file an exemption.
Yep.
And do you know of anybody that have expressed an interest or taken any action to move that direction?
Answer your last question first. No, I don't. And we've been an exemption to the Act itself must come from the state. Individuals are not mentioned as being privy to applying for exemptions. And efforts have been exerted. In fact, the March Hawaii Fishing News, I didn't write an article, I submitted the letter that I wrote to Laura Thielen, the director of the DLNR, on reconsidering her previous position with the Western Pacific Fisheries Management Council people to get together with the federal fisheries people and work out something wherein we can come up with a compromise exemption, if you will, to the specifics of the Act itself. Her initial reply was indicated she wasn't, she was opposed to doing that, and I haven't had a reply to the letter yet, although it was written 2 months ago, and we're hoping, and that's probably a good sign, that the door may still be open, that we can get some cooperation from the state to apply for an exemption that would essentially relieve the Hawaii fishermen from registration and having to pay for that registration, and also relieve them from the very likely federal rules that will accompany registration. It's well known to most fishermen that the federal level fisheries people have a tendency to drift into a one size fits all type of regulations. And we all know from experience that one size usually doesn't fit all, especially in Hawaii.
Or if it does, one size fitting all, someone will be uncomfortable with it, or it causes hardship,
yeah,
and what have you. And
amen.
What is puzzling to me in this whole process, and I keep up with this, but as I walk around and I speak and talk to different fishermen and others that are interested in this, it's my opinion that the DLNR, who's responsible for enforcing and regulating the catch and the take of various species and natural resources, in my opinion, I don't believe they've made a real honest effort to apprise the public or the fishermen of the exemptions or afford them the bits of knowledge. It seems as though, I'll use it as this, with the DLNR, we say the fox is guarding the hen house in most instances. In this case, with the Magnuson-Stevenson Reauthorization Act, this is what I'm seeing. I see the DLNR as the blind catfish watching over the nursery or the hatchery, and they're not doing a good job, and they should be saying to the feds that we believe in management, and we want to take what you present to us, and we want to embrace that, but we wanted to do it in a sensible way, a way that it's feasible. And you take, for example, there was a rule passed on shark fin, as we discussed earlier, and that legislators passed a rule. But the bottom line is, on shark fin, you can't bring in shark fin without a body. But there's a company right now that we've documented bringing in tons of shark fin without the body. We can't get any action. And this was, fought by NIMS at first. DLNR went along with it, but no enforcement. So my question is this just going to be another law, and who's going to enforce it? if the DLNR don't have the boats or the manpower, is this law necessary?
Yeah, there's a few people in town. Some of them, unfortunately, are established fishermen who are of the opinion that if the state doesn't adopt the principles of the Magnuson Act, then the federal authorities will come in and force our hand out here. In other words, they'll enforce their federal laws in Hawaii. Now, if you read the article I wrote in the last Fishing News, you will remember that there are several obstacles, basic obstacles, to the federal government doing that to begin with, which I won't elaborate here. But the whole scheme is a federally initiated, and the state is on the receiving end. So between those two parties, some action should be taken, in my opinion, and an exemption, which we have described in detail to the state, should be considered.
Gary, can you give us some input on this?
Just kind of I'm not exactly confused, but I just want to know I got it straight, Bill. I'm let's say, for example, I'm a recreational fisherman. Or at least I'm a non-commercial guy. I eat what I catch, or I give it away. I don't sell it. So heretofore, I've never had to fill out any forms. I've never been licensed. I don't have a permit. I'm just a guy living in Hawaii, going out fishing and taking it back home. Now Magnuson Stevens has come along and said, I've got to get registered, and maybe I got to have a license. And on top of that, of course, with a license comes reporting. However, if I understand you correctly, either all of the recreational fishermen have individually got to go get registered, or there's another way to accomplish this registration to meet Magnuson Stevens' requirements, but that the state government, namely Laura Thielen and the DLNR, have to apply for an exemption for a different kind of registration.
That is absolutely correct, yeah.
That's it. So what we really like to do is to see our state government take up our plight instead of all of this individual one-on-one with the Fed government sort of an issue. We'd really like to see the state apply for an exemption.
Absolutely. I mean, that all of our efforts, and the people I know, you guys and others that I know, are trying to get the state to do something. It has to be initiated by the state. You and I and any fishermen or other groups can't, are not allowed to initiate applications for exemption.
So it's got to come through DLNR, yeah. Through state government, which means DLNR.
However, I may be jumping ahead of myself, but along with the Magnuson Stevens Act, the federal government puts out laws that apply the act to the states or to the people. These laws are processed through the Federal Register, which is the national document that makes announcements that to the people that a law such and such as we have printed out in our Federal Register is up for approval, and you have an opportunity. They're talking to the people now. You have an opportunity to make comments to this new law. And they give you a certain amount of time to do that. So there's another opportunity for us individuals, other than the state, to react to these federal laws, which I expect will mirror the Magnuson Stevens Act.
Well, personally, I'm for conservation and protection, but I'm also for being reasonable and not placing burdens on an industry or people or what have you, the recreational or the commercial, that is unnecessary. And what I'm gathering from this process, due to the lack of significant and substantial information that's afforded to the public, that this is a force-fed situation. The feds, and I mean that's force-fed, F-E-D now, and as in federal, they come up with the idea, and the state having no mechanism or interest, because in generally there's lots of funds and they go along to get along. But the reality is we don't even have the boats within the state fleet to monitor the fishing industry. We have a marine unit here, but in reality, it's all going to fall back on the U.S. Coast Guard unless I see some serious monies shelled in the way of the state DLNR. And in my opinion, I believe that the state should adopt its own laws, be aggressive in protecting if there is a stress on these species. Not to say we walk away and turn our backs on the species, but I've seen it too often that we have wonderful laws with absolutely no policy and no ability to even enforce them. So based on what I know and what I've seen, I just don't see it being carried out the way, and I'm concerned that this is just yet another rule that really isn't going to go anywhere. And are there a memorandum of agreements or memorandum of understandings between the state yet and the feds to agree on the enforcement and how the handling of this? Are you familiar with that or anything like that exists?
No, we don't. And yes, that is a requirement for any cooperative agreement between the state and the federal government on enforcement. Enforcement will be part of that agreement.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying to me is that it's going to occur in January of 2009. January 1, 2009, it comes into effect?
That's when the registry, which I'll talk about later, is going to be effective.
Okay, so does that mean that we're in May, they got 8 months to hurry and scurry to get this thing into effect, and that seems like it'll be problematic in the long run. So are we really?
I would think so, Carol. Especially having heard that the Federal Register announcement, if you will, of the proposed new rules should be coming out this month. And all we would need to do is take a look at those and see if they are aligned with what we already know, and that would be our last opportunity to make comments.
Gary, you have any?
Just sort of a odd question, Bill. You have any idea at all as why it sounds to me like DLNR is dragging its feet? You know, they're not. You say you've written them a letter, no response. They're not doing anything. Any idea why they're dragging their feet on this? Why aren't they moving quickly to ask for an exemption for Hawaii's fishermen?
You know, that's a mystery to me, and I'm glad you asked that, because it started out being a mystery to me, which I honestly had no answer to. And then I find out in conversations with other people that the departments within the DLNR, like the Division of Boating and Ocean Recreation, which is the custodian of the state vessel registration system, and the Division of Aquatic Resources, which we mentioned earlier, they're both subdivisions of DLNR. And the people that work with them, the federal people that work with them, who discuss the Magnuson-Stevens impact and what can be done, all report that they have a full cooperation of these sub-departments in getting access to the state vessel registration system. Now, that mystifies me, because you know, the director has taken an opposing stand. And these people who are, the federal people who are reporting these, this good relationship that they have with these sub-departments are people who work on the issue. So I don't know. I really don't know. I would think the people who are familiar with the situation and who work on the data that we're discussing should be listened to.
We're going to take a break for a minute here and try and regroup, and I want to talk more with Gary Deal and Bill Mossman, and we'll return back shortly.
This is KWAI Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.
If you're like me, you're looking for ways to save money on gas and help the environment. That's why you want to know about the EPA's smart driving tips. Tips that could give you more miles per gallon of gas and reduce air pollution. like making sure your tires are properly inflated and replacing your air filter regularly. Where possible, accelerate and brake slowly.
Slowly.
And did you know that for every 5 miles you go over 65 miles per hour, you're spending about 20 cents more per gallon of gas? Also, if you're shopping for a new car, choose the cleanest, most efficient vehicle that meets your needs. If we each adopt just one of these tips, we'd get more miles for our money and breathe a little easier. For more tips and to compare cleaner, more efficient vehicles, visit www.epa.gov/greenvehicles.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Here with Gary Deal and Bill Mossman. Now, just for interests of disclosure, and we want to be on the up and up, and I don't want anyone... We think that these issues and all issues should get the fair shake in public scrutiny. The biggest concern I have so often, take for example this Reauthorization Act, the Magnuson-Stevenson Reauthorization Act, so often is that the government have years to actually plan and incorporate and write and draw up laws, and they then have meetings amongst themselves, or interagency meetings, or with state and feds, and it's all going to impact the public. But what normally happens is that they then have a public meeting, which is a standard requirement, and then the public gets an opportunity to come in and give 1 minute on occasion, maybe three at most, depending on the number of people, to sit and explain themselves and offer their objections or support. And I think that hopefully through this effort, we are able to get our 15 minutes of discussion, so to speak. And so I'm going to ask Gary to give us a little background about yourself. I want everyone to know who's doing what and who is coming from which angle. Gary, go ahead.
Well, without a complete life history, I did happen upon these lovely shores back in 1965, and a little while after that, I became what we all know as a weekend warrior. So I'm really, I guess my roots are really in what's been generally known as recreational fishing. That's where I started, and it's still a very big part of me. Just last weekend, I was captain of a boat with the Wahinis in the Senoritas tournament that the Hawaii Yacht Club puts on every year. So I'm still involved in that with my boat. But I drifted over the years into really liking bottom fishing, and I drifted from Oahu, Penguin Banks, Molokai, out westward, and I finally ended up with a bottom fishing permit in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, which is the main part of my my activities now as a commercial fisherman. And I am president of the group of the last few fishermen remaining in the Northwest called the Northwest Hawaiian Island Bottom Fishing Hui. And on behalf of those guys, sooner or later, I do have an announcement for the fish consumers of the state. But that's about it. So I've really got my foot in both rings, both recreational and commercial. And although there's nothing really big in the new Magnuson-Stevens for the commercial guys, there's a lot of stuff in there for that other aspect of me, which is the recreational fisherman.
Okay. And Bill, can you tell us about yourself? And you're with the HPBAA. Break that down for us. It's a mouthful of alphabets.
It's just a name for a few people, Hawaii Boaters Political Action Association, and I just use that as a means of identifying ourselves. My personal background in fishing has been that I've been a fisherman, boat owner for over 25 years, recently retired. Fish both commercially and recreationally. And, I've had my fun in fishing. I'm getting older now, so I'm stepping out of the active fishing. Body told me to. And but not getting out of the game. I think I would like to continue contributing in the way we're doing now into maintaining some sanity in the way fishermen are treated by the laws, etc.
Good. Now, I don't want to be the one who advocate for anyone, but what I would say that you fishermen out there and all those that are interested in the environmental issues and concerns, it's up to you to get involved and not try and digest what is being sent to you in the slicks or in the inserts in the newspapers and what have you. Take it upon yourself. Don't complain if you just picking it up and reading and then you later find out it's not what you thought you wanted. Spend the time now. We've had bad rules before. We've had good rules. So fishermen, I'm not seeing the activity and the frenzy that we should be seeing if you're concerned, especially with the number of complaints. Everyone's complaining, but I'm not seeing any action. So I'm not advocating, but I would say in your best interest, I would say to all of you out there and to contact Ms. Thielen, DLNR chairman, chairperson, and ask of her, or present to her, or attend some of the meetings, write letters. But again, not advocating for any stance, but I can see the way things have unfolded, and in my opinion, you're not getting your fair shake of information. Having said all that, what I want to do is go back to Gary, and there's some concerns I have with, I'm in a sense, we've had problems in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, and there were impacts, and there were stresses, as you and I have talked, and there are some negative impacts and positive impacts or whatever, but it affording people jobs. Can you tell us which areas are closed to bottom fishing and what areas are open currently?
Sure can. Bottom fishery, and again, we're talking mostly of the larger, deeper fish, for purposes of management, both the state and the feds, divided into two areas. One area is main Hawaiian Islands, populated islands, and the other is the rest of the state, the rest of the two-thirds of the state, that stretch from Niihau all the way to Kauri, Midway and Kauri. It's northwest. So these are separated as management areas. And what the federal government has determined, the National Marine Fisheries Service has determined a couple of years ago, is that the bottom fish stocks, especially those of Deep 7 we talked about, were being stressed. They don't know how bad, but they know they're being stressed in the main Hawaiian Islands. So a number of years ago, the federal government required the state government to go, you know, to do something about it, and the state government did in fact construct some marine preservation areas around the state which were supposed to help those stocks, in particular the red ones, Ehu and Onaga. Well, several years later, the Fed has determined that nothing has happened. The stocks are still being stressed, overly stressed, and in fact, faster and faster. So last year, the federal government came in, and again, this was a forced Fed type of action, required the state to go along with them, and closed the bottom fishery in the main Hawaiian Islands for 5 months last year. This year, they've just done it again in mid-April. The two various government agencies closed the main Hawaiian Island bottom fisheries again for 4 months. So we're looking at these closures as management measures, which are based upon Magnus and Stevens' new total allowable catch, annual catch limit quota. Okay, so these are the two areas, but what I'd like to point out to the fish-eating public here is that there's good news and there's bad news. Okay, so the bad news is if you like to eat a little opaka paka, you're going to be on the short end of things for the next 4 months because half the fish landed here come out of the main Hawaiian Islands, half of these deep seven. And there will be no fishing. These areas are closed. You cannot catch one. You cannot keep one on your boat. If you accidentally catch one, you got to throw it back. Okay? You can't bring it in and eat it. You can't bring it in and give it away. And you can't bring it in and sell it. Not from the main Hawaiian Islands. But the good news is the Northwest Hawaiian Islands have been determined to be very healthy, extremely healthy, in fact. And so the fellows that fish up there, although there's not too many of them anymore, are still bringing in bottom fish to the Honolulu market and to the neighbor islands. So you can, in fact, still get your favorite opaka paka or your favorite ehu to steam up. But what you really got to do is you got to go to your fish buyer, your favorite fish store, and get them to keep an eye out for these guys when they do come back, because there's not too many of them left anymore. There's only 6 active boats and 2 other permits that are putting boats in the water as I speak. So it's not a whole fleet that's constantly bringing in fish. So you really got to talk to your fishmonger and get him or her to keep an eye peeled for you to pick these fish up when they do hit the auction block. So that's the good news. We still have some. It's not as much as we'd like, and you're going to have to work a little harder to find them. But we do have fish from the Northwest year-round, perfectly legal.
So, with the closures, and I'm going to step outside the boundaries of U.S. waters and the waters in which you folks fish in, do you think that the demand for fish will decrease because of the closure? Or do you think that the palate of the public or the fish-eating community will stay the same and that someone will have to feed that craving? And if so, where is it coming from? And the bigger question is this going to impact resources in other Pacific Island nations?
You got to admit, Carl, the people of Hawaii are fish-eating crazies. We consume more seafood than on a per capita basis than anybody else in the country. So the demand is there. I mean, we have our tastes, we have our traditions, we've got our cultural practices, and we just plain old like seafood. So we're going to continue to buy it. Okay. In the case of bottom fish, when you have a big closure like this and you wipe out half of the production of the fishery for 4 months or 5 months, we're still going to want to eat bottom fish. We're still going to want our pakapaka and our anaga. And the only place you're going to get it, outside, of course, the Northwest, is by imports. I saw a bit the other day that estimated during the closure, we're going to have 7 pounds of imported bottom fish for every pound of locally caught bottom fish during this period. That's enormous. And the professionals in the game, the buyers and the importers and exporters, they've known this for a while, and they've geared up. So they've put out orders, and they're going to continue putting out orders for bottom fish and even, you know, tuna from overseas to fill the gap, because they have to, because the people in Hawaii are demanding it and are willing to pay for it. So these fish are going to come in from overseas. Where exactly overseas and how long it's going to take to get them in, fly them in, and take care of them and so forth. These are big problems for the industry. But it's going to fall on mostly what we call the underdeveloped nations, I think. The islands to the south, Tonga, Samoa, Fiji, New Caledonia for that matter, the Solomons and so forth that we can get through, that we can reach through Australia and New Zealand. Indonesia is now getting into the game. We see a lot of fish coming from Indonesia into Hawaii now. And so these are going to be the areas that currently have no restrictions, have no rules, and sometimes don't even have safe handling regimens laid out. But these are the areas that are going to respond to the temptation of the big money in Hawaii to bring their fish in.
So when you say safe handling, you're talking about HACCP, about the Hazard Analysis Critical Control Point, where it has to be chilled at a certain level and handled at all times. Is that what you mean?
A very detailed, very health-conscious American rule. Yeah, it's an American law that applies to American fishermen and is simply not unknown in Indonesia, unknown in Tonga.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to be careful and not come across as advocating for closure or open of the fisheries in Northwest Hawaii. But I'll offer this. What we have been following, and we will be coming up in future shows, about the quality of fish, the cleanliness of the fish that is being imported. And in speaking to that, what we are documenting right now as we speak is occurring. If you look at day before yesterday, there was a front page photograph of Aloha Cargo. And then the second picture below that was Luentai, large cargo boxes said Luentai, L-U-E-N-T-H-A-I. And this Luentai company has 170 boats in the Pacific operating out of Guam, Palau, Ponape, Marshall Islands, Majuro. In Majuro, it's called the Majuro Ventures Fishing Company, owned by them. This fish now is making its way. What we have been documented, and you've seen some probably in the news, and unfortunately the State Health Department and the Food and Drug, United States Food and Drug Administration has been neglecting to tell the public and keep them apprised, but we've actually had people to get sick. Some 32 cases here in Hawaii, a couple in Texas, California, Colorado, when we talk about the cleanliness and the handling of the hazard. And this was yellowfin tuna, imported, previously frozen, treated with carbon monoxide. So if you see what's happening to get that fish here, it is presenting a problem. But the bigger concern and an environmental concern is that it's being impacted, talking about the stresses here, the fish and the population of fish in those communities in Ponape, Palau. What is the regulatory effort? Are they getting the real scrutiny that they need? And is it clean? Is it coming here? And so today, right now, the FDA is investigating, and the Department of Health, a couple of more cases just recently occurred in late April, one in Michigan and one in Connecticut. And it's the information we have is that they were in Florida eating sashimi, and they suspect that they consume, and it has salmonella in it. So if you look at these facilities, so closing an area and then opening the gates to allow fish to come in without the critical control concerns and the health concerns, it's going to do two things. It's going to subject the public to a risk of illnesses associated with sick fish, and it's going to impact the local markets here. And you had one other point regarding the Magnuson-Stevenson Act. Don't want to be jumping around, but I want to make sure that you get that in.
Thank you, Carol. It is a very important point, and I purposely left it for last because I can spend more time on it. It's the method. I want to talk about the method that the Magnuson-Stevens Act uses for the gathering and processing of recreational fishing data. While they were writing the Magnuson Act, the people involved recognized that the recreational methods of gathering data, which were all statistical methods, were not, they charged that they were not credible, and there was a lot of bad talk on the statistical data that was being gathered for the recreational catches. So their answer to that was a specific paragraph in the Magnuson Act, which created the Federal Fisheries Registry, I call it. It's the registry I mentioned earlier wherein all the Hawaii fishermen would have to register names in and later on pay fees to. When I say all the fishermen, I mean both the shore and the boat guys now. What we have been suggesting as a state exemption effort has been to use as our registry in the state of Hawaii just the boat-based fishermen. And the boat-based fishermen are already in the state vessel registration system that's handled by DBOR. Within the state, this would provide the names and all the necessary information that the federal government wants, the Magnuson people want, for the captain, and by the captain I mean the owner or the principal operator of each recreational vessel, to provide those names to create a state registry which is entirely boat-based rather than including all the names of the passengers who might be aboard that boat as passengers or other fishermen, etc., and even the shore, all the shore-based guys. So what we need to understand is that we are suggesting that we use the state vessel fishing fishing system, not fishing, state vessel registration system, which already has and segregates all the recreational fishing boats, and use that resource as the basis of an exemption to the Magnuson requirement. Instead of giving them, instead of putting into the registry all the names of all the people aboard all the boats that fish in the Hawaii waters, all they need is the owner or the principal operator to be on that register. Now, the rationale here is that the real reason for doing all of this is to get a more efficiently gather the data and to more effectively use the data. And the data that's being pursued and is of the paramount importance is the fishery data management effort, the effort of the fishermen in their endeavors in the Hawaii waters, and the catch. This catch per unit of effort is a across the board measurement of fishing effectiveness, and this is what they're trying to effectively develop statistically, without having the fishermen report their actual catch on every trip. They want to take these samples from this register that we're creating via telephone or by intercept surveys at the piers and the ramps, and statistically develop the catch data for the recreational sector. This we fully support. I think that's the way to do it. Chasing an actual reporting system for recreational fishermen is a difficult task. So that's the point I wanted to leave with you all.
Good. Bill, I'd like to take this opportunity. I've known you for many, many, many years, and you've sat on the opposite side of the fence on some occasions, and that's what is good about arriving at a healthy decision and managing the resources. I don't think the public would ever know that you're doing this most of the time for free and volunteering, just as a citizen.
All the time.
All the time, I should say. So, you know, there are heroes amongst us that go unnoticed. And so I personally want to say thank you, because you've been out there. And Gary, how about you? You anything you want to conclude with?
I do it for free, too.
Okay.
just a real brief recap to jump back to the last things that you were saying, Carl. I guess my advice to Hawaii's consumer is that same one we've had for a thousand years. Caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. When you go into your favorite supermarket or fish stall, federal law requires all people, including restaurants, to say whether that fish is imported or not. Federal law requires it. It maybe isn't always enacted, but it's required. And you can always ask, and don't be afraid to ask, where did this fish come from? Was it frozen? Was it gassed? You know, you ask the fish cutters, the guys that are stocking the shelves, ask the guy behind the counter. And then make your decision based on that.
Good. Well, I want to thank both of you for coming, and you're welcome to come back again anytime. Just give us a call or call in. And I'd also like to, again, invite the public to call in, or you can call in at 782-6627 is our cell number. You can contact us anytime, or the station, 524-1080. Or you can email us at carol@carolcox.com. That's carroll@carroll.com. Again, thank you. So for next, coming up is the Hawaii Bulletin Board with Calvin Griffin on 1080 KWAI. And I want to thank you, and I hope to be back next week. And thank you again.
This is KWAI.